listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
The time is upon us where Chris Mueller is back in studio with us. Timmery Millington here. We've got a lot coming up today on the show. We're talking about the CDC's report on an increase in sexually transmitted diseases. They are on the rise, and I want to discuss how we can create more awareness here. We'll also be talking about the decade-long rise in non-marital child rearing, essentially, and how there's a little bit of a change. We'll talk a little bit about how women in TV are still represented as mothers and wives and what we think about that, and much more to come on the show. Welcome back, Chris.
Yeah, thanks. I'm happy to be back. I thought I was back 2 weeks ago, and then I got sick, which is no good. Yeah, my son and I went on this incredible trip with kind of my brother and his sons, and then his son's sons, some friends from church, and a wonderful priest went off the mountains with us. And I came back, and I just was like, I had no voice at all.
No voice.
Just a hacking cough and no voice. And really, no one wants to listen to that. So.
It was great. He's like, Timmery, I can come in still. He's like, but you'll be stuck in a box with me. And part of me's like, oh, man, should we risk it?
Yeah. If you haven't ever seen us on the live feed, the studio is not a spacious place. And so as I'm turning away from the microphone to hack off mic, I'm probably just going to be hacking on Timmery. So, yeah.
It is a lovely, lovely time. But man, I want to talk here about the CDC report. I remember last summer coming off spending some time in the summer with Pam Stenzel. And I bring her up because if you are not aware of her, she really approaches the issue of abstinence and chastity from the perspective of a lot of science, non-Christian based. She can do Christian based. She's Catholic as well. But it's interesting because she really focuses a lot on sexually transmitted diseases. So I spent like hearing five of her presentations, and then all of a sudden we come out and the CDC is reporting all of these pieces of information, and we're hearing that basically, there are so many forms of sexually transmitted diseases that are on the rise right now that they're mutating themselves and they're not even treatable.
Right.
Then this summer, Chris, yet again, we find out that sexually transmitted diseases are on a heavy rise for the fourth year in a row at an all-time high.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think as a public, we're starting to become aware that all of these hand sanitizers, all of the overprescription of antibiotics is causing these super mutated bacteria and viruses. The problem, and I think that sensitivity stops in the realm of STDs. Like I think most people are just completely unaware that STDs are still out there, and not just out there, but rising at astronomical rates. And the idea of a super gonorrhea, for instance, it's here. It's not something that might happen. It's already happened, and it's more and more prevalent.
So my question to you guys, and we're going to get into more of what's going on, but it's how do we create more awareness about the sexual harms and really the sexual harms leading to the area of sexually transmitted diseases? Because if we can talk more about this, apparently the pregnancy issue isn't getting into people's minds enough as well. But maybe if we talk more so from the perspective of STDs as well, we can have a more well-rounded approach to sexual health.
You know, it's funny. Culture really has an effect on what is acceptable behavior. And we look at what happened in terms of the sexual revolution in the 1960s and kind of the wages of that, you know, the wages of sin or death. And what we're seeing is a rise in all of these things we were supposed to be bigger than, you know, like we weren't going to have sexually transmitted disease because we had safe sex. We weren't going to have teenage pregnancy because we had contraception. You know, we had all of these things. And guess what? Promiscuity leads to sexually transmitted disease. It leads to unplanned pregnancy. And it wasn't always this way. I mean, one of the statistics we're going to talk about, and we get into the births question, births outside of marriage, is in the early 60s, what was it, 4% of children were born outside of wedlock? So what does that tell you? It means there's a lot less extramarital sex happening, right? Mm-hmm. And so you see this rise in STDs. Well, that's only possible because you've got a promiscuous society. It doesn't happen in, you know, how do we fix it? How do we solve it? What's the answer? Well, stop having sex with people you're not married to. That's the answer. It's really simple. You know, but no, that's unrealistic. Well, it's not unrealistic because it was the way it used to be.
And people are living this way. And guess what? These are the people who are having successful marriages,
right?
Thriving relationships, beautiful families. Their children are also the ones who are doing the best in school today.
Right. You know, and I don't have those studies right offhand, but, you know, statistically, what marriages are lasting? Well, the monogamous ones, the ones that people waited for, saved themselves. They went in chastely. You know, where are people reporting the most satisfaction in their marriages? In the ones that are monogamous and the ones that are faithful and the ones that are grounded, the ones that where they waited for each other. And so we've bought a pack of lies, you know, and the church talks about this. Nobody has a right to a trial marriage, right? But we talk about this is the normal thing.
Hey, come on, just move in together. You'll figure it out.
Oh, it's all going to be better. But what we find is that leads to greater instances of divorce. It leads to greater instances of STDs. Because
likelihood
you don't
to never be committed to.
Right. And if you don't have, because if you have a trial marriage, it doesn't work. What do? You have another trial marriage. It doesn't work.
Right.
And then now we're seeing this hookup culture and the explosion of that. Well, of course, you're going to have a rise in STDs. You know, of course it's going to happen. So I don't know. I think we're dumb, and this is the wages of our dumbness.
You know, Chris, it's interesting because I was talking to a friend not too long ago, and we were talking about how we are seeing it so common among friendships where, we all have those friends where they're living promiscuous lifestyles, and sometimes you're surprised that it doesn't catch up with them. Well, the reality is that they often don't share when it does.
Well, yeah.
And I was just talking to someone recently, and they're sexually promiscuous. Lifestyle has caught up with them. And I know some people are saying, hey, that's kind of intense to say. You know, she maybe only slept around with 2 or 3 guys, not 20. Well, guess what? A young woman in her early 20s now has contracted HPV. She
right.
has now been told that it's advisable not to live a sexually active lifestyle. She'll always have it, right? Well, guess what? She finally ended up meeting someone after she swore off, well, I'm going to be sexually pure for a little while now. Well, she met someone she really liked, started having sex with him, and she didn't tell him she had HPV until much later on.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, you know, he's upset with her because she didn't tell him, hey, I have an STD. And she's wondering, well, why is he upset with me? You know, this is so common. And I remember seeing this in the crisis pregnancy centers where the guys wouldn't be checked out. And there, here we are with a woman who has an STD and her life has been radically changed.
His life, her life. I mean, yeah. You know, the article we're referencing here, it talks about chlamydia, syphilis, and gonorrhea. And I always feel like I have to do this. If you have kids in the car, I am so sorry. But we are talking about some things. So if your kids are like, what is that? Just say, you know, if you're living a life, you're acting like you're married with someone you're not married to, it has problems. But what's interesting about those three diseases is they often go undiagnosed.
Yes.
It's not even so much that people are concealing it as they may not be aware that they have it. And what happens is you have a much higher than tendency towards the inability to get pregnant or ectopic pregnancies or stillbirth or even an increased risk of HIV. You know, and so, you know, all of these things like, they're getting away with it. Oh, no, I feel like they have this lifestyle they're leading and they never have to deal with the consequences. And you go, well, no, they do or they will, but that's just going to come down the road later.
Well, and what's interesting is people are not talking about the fact that sexually transmitted diseases impact women far more than they do men. Men are often carriers but don't show symptoms, and it often doesn't impact their fertility. Versus women, that is not the case. They end up showing symptoms, and not just small rashes in certain areas, but long-term symptoms like Chris just talked about. And it's so heartbreaking because women also think, well, I just ended up getting checked out to see if I have an STD. Well, if you have been sexually active, if you have ever had more than one partner, you need to be tested every few years because there are certain types of sexually transmitted diseases that will not show themselves for years at a time. So from the point where you've been sexually active with certain partners, you need to start testing yourselves at certain intervals, and you or maybe someone you know needs to get in contact with their medical professional in order to make sure they're being tested properly.
Yeah, say that again, because I think people don't understand that. I think people have a tendency to think, I was with somebody, but, and then I got tested like a week later, but so I'm cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, what I'm saying is that many STDs do not show symptoms that allow for us to diagnose whether or not you have an STD unless you are testing every few years. There are some that have to be tested every few years, some that have to be tested every 5 years, because those symptoms just don't show themselves. And then you're living with an STD and, in fact, spreading it to other people and you're unaware.
Right. I go back to this and I just go back to this. There's a real easy solution. It's a cultural shift. And again, this, it wasn't always this way. There used to be real strong kind of cultural taboos on having sex before marriage. There used to be these sort of, and again, there was never a point in human history where no one had sex outside of marriage, but it wasn't the culturally accepted thing. There were stigmas associated with it. And so the numbers were lower. And since we've had this sexual revolution, what's happened is those numbers have climbed, they've climbed. And this is what comes from that.
And this isn't just Chris and Timory telling you this on trending. What's come out is this summer, the director of the CDC, the National Center essentially dealing with HIV, AIDS, all the different types of sexually transmitted diseases and infections, have commented, coming out saying, we're sliding backward. Systems that treat these are nearly at the breaking point. They are not able to keep up. And remember, just this past summer, we learned that there are many different types of sexually transmitted diseases, specifically gonorrhea, that's seen a 67% increase, and it has been untreatable. I have to emphasize this, people, we need to wake up, because maybe you're sitting in the car with your kids right now. Well, here's an opportunity. Talk to them about it.
I think St. Paul said it so succinctly, you know, the wages of sin are death. You can't get around that. It will catch up. There's no quick fix. We'll be back with Trending in just a second.
Chris and Timory will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Welcome back to Trending. Chris Mueller is back. I'm Timory Millington, and we're talking about the CDC's report that for the fourth year standing, sexually transmitted diseases are at an all-time high, and they're increasing. Just this past year, we've seen a 76% increase in syphilis, for example. But here's the deal, Chris, and this is something I wanted to comment on. The fact that people think they're safe very easily. Well, I used a condom.
Right.
I'm on hormonal contraception. I still want to vomit every time someone says, well, I'm on the pill. Yeah, you still have an exchange of bodily fluids, by the way. But here's the deal. I'm going to be really blunt here. Say you're using a condom. You think you're safe. Okay, well, we've got to talk about the fact that sex is messy and the fact that fluid can still go on to other areas such as the scrotum, and you still have an exchange of fluids taking place. You don't just have fluid if you have no condom. Like, we've got to talk about this, because people think they're fine if they're using a condom. But the reality is that fluid is secreting onto other areas of the body, and the fluid is still being exchanged.
Yeah, there's something about human beings, and it's one of our greatest strengths, but also one of our greatest weaknesses, that for some reason, we all think we are the exception to the rule, right? And you're not. I mean, the reality is trends, like the forces, biology. I mean, it doesn't matter that you think you're invincible, you're not. And again, I go back to this cultural shift. Like, it's a cultural mindset. It's the way we parent. It's the way we educate. It's the music we listen to. As long as the culture keeps telling young people, and again, the largest group where this rising is 15 to 25 year olds. It's not across the board. It's 15 to 25 year olds, that really vulnerable, like, I can do anything, I'm invincible age. As long as we keep telling them that there is no repercussion, they're going to continue to say, well, I'm the exception to the rule. I know that happens to some people, not me, because we're in love, or whatever your dumb reasoning is. It's going to keep happening. And so as a culture, we have to start. The stigmas were good. The stigmas protected these things. And we're not anti-sex. We're so pro-sex, right? Like, we really want this to be something that's powerful in the lives of married couples. That is, that in its proper place has great effect and great purpose. But again, outside of its proper place, you know, fire is a great thing to warm your home and to cook your food. But it's not a great thing if you're holding it in your hand or in your lap.
And we're playing with fire. And I'm so glad that you said that, Chris, that everyone always thinks they're the exception. Look at the people who are in the jail and prison system often. They thought that they would get away with what they did oftentimes. Or look at anyone who's been in an unplanned pregnancy and they're a single mom.
Right.
They thought that that wasn't going to affect them.
How did this happen? All right, well, let me get a chart. I can make it real simple for you. I mean, how did it happen is really simple. A plus B equals C. I mean, like, it does. That's what it does. That's what it's for. You know, it's really good at it. Like, you know.
But that's the question that the women in the crisis pregnancy centers would ask the counselors. I remember working at Life Choices, how often the counselor would walk out after that session and she would say, we had a moment where we're talking about, if you're pregnant, let's talk about this before the pregnancy test is finished. Or if you're not pregnant, let's look at the two different lifestyles that can happen. And her response is, well, that's not possible. I can't be pregnant. And you want to laugh like, well, did you have sex? Well, yeah. Okay, so then you could be pregnant.
No, no, that's impossible. That's not what that does. No, that's exactly what that does. Yeah, I know. It's but again, this whole lie of the sexual revolution.
So here's a story. We're talking about pregnancy. There's been a decade-long rise in non-marital children bearing and having children. And it's really interesting because all of a sudden there's what seems like it might be a temporary decline, but not in all areas of women, essentially.
Right. I just before, just to set the stage, in the 1960s, I believe 1960, 4% of births were outside of marriage. Mm. This is pre widespread use of contraception.
Yes.
This is pre sexual revolution. This is pre abortion, right? For a large scale abortion. There were, you know, all the exceptions in all those cases. 1960, 4%. What kept those marriages inside, those births inside marriage? It was a cultural paradigm, right, that said that. Now, today, 40,000 children are born outside of wedlock every year. Over 40% of births are outside of wedlock today. So we went from 4% to over 40%.
What happened? We've got to look at this because it isn't just the fact that people now have contraception, people now have abortion. This is what happened. 60s, California, no-fault divorce. Then what happens? Griswold versus Connecticut, contraception. So we've just taken sex outside of marriage, and now we've also taken babies outside of sex. Then you have the fail-safe. You have abortion. Then we have, well, we don't know the difference between men and women, and now we're saying, well, marriage is between anyone. It doesn't matter who you are, what you look like. You know, none of this matters, how your body's made to function. It doesn't matter anymore. This is where we've gotten to, and this is why you're seeing this trend.
It's really frustrating to me, because I talk to parents, and, you know, these are some of my peers, and they'll say things like, well, kids are going to do what they're going to do. They're going to do what they're going to do. And well, statistically, no, that's not true. The reason we teach our kids good, strong morals is we care enough about them to put a little pressure on them to do the right thing. And this is where I really get frustrated with other parents, is they go, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about it. So we better just put our kids on the pill or teach them how to use safe sex or do those things. And statistically, that doesn't work. And so statistically, what did work was telling them, save yourself for marriage, and modeling that and putting around a good, strong community around them and the church around them to reinforce that teaching. And you know, again, we're seeing the trend dip a little bit. But what was it, like a 10% dip? It was like, it was not a very large dip.
It's actually not even 2%. So the trend has been for the last 10 years, it's been at about 41% since 2007 is where unmarried child rearing has been. Now we for the first time since 2007, we've dropped barely below 40%. Well, is that just because of contraception and abortion? No, actually, we're learning that overall, young people today are actually having less sex. Well, why is that? Decreasing libido, antidepressants, pornography, masturbation.
Right.
So there's still a lot of sex taking place, but there's also a lot of, I don't know how we want to put it, but manipulation of the body taking place to avoid that.
Yeah, it's honestly, the reasons for the decline are in some respects terrifying, because what we're seeing is people rather than attraction for members of the opposite sex in real life, they're turning towards computers. So what we're creating is an asexual generation, you know,
right.
And that is really sick. And so as a parent, I want to raise healthy kids. What do I do? Well, I should create a system around my kids to limit their contact exposure to online pornography. I should encourage them and teach them how to date. Things like the Dating Project were great. I should I should reinforce monogamy and chastity and saving yourself for marriage and try to raise them in community that upholds those values as well. But hey, brothers and sisters, Christians, we're fighting the culture here. And I hate to be like, oh, the culture's so terrible. But no, we're not progressing as a culture. We're regressing as a culture. We're becoming more and more like ancient Greece, ancient Rome every day. We're becoming more and more of a pre-Christianized society every day. And what we're seeing from that is all of these statistics we're talking about, whether that was the rise in STDs or the unbelievable rate at which children are born out of wedlock, which has now dipped slightly. It's terrifying.
Well, that's interesting, is they're saying it's dipped slightly, but it's actually only dipped among the most educated of women. That when women are more educated, bachelor's degree and on, that those are the people who are having fewer children. Because in actuality, there's still a good rise of children within the Hispanic community having more children, within the white community having more children. But here's, I've just got to pause for a second, because this just made my stomach turn when I saw this. What we've seen since 2009 is that African American women have seen the largest decline in unmarried childbearing. There's a reason for this. Yeah. Planned Parenthood has targeted African American communities, specifically with contraception and abortion.
You have to look at the roots of what Planned Parenthood was created to do. I mean, Margaret Sanger was a terrible person. I mean, you can't get around that. And she was a racist. I mean, go back and read her writings. I mean, she was someone who would speak at KKK rallies. This is the founder of Planned Parenthood. And she talked about Planned Parenthood as a way to get rid of undesirable elements or races. And I hate to say it, but Planned Parenthood has continued to, I don't hate to say it, it is actually the truth. Planned Parenthood's gone out and lived out that mission consistently since the time of its founding. And if you want to go find a Planned Parenthood, if you really want to know where one is, look for low-income minority neighborhoods, and that's where they go. It's sick. And I think there are, you know, you'll see a lot of associations of pastors and priests saying that this, we don't want this anymore, get this out of our neighborhoods. But if you talk to Planned Parenthood, they're just, it's all about the social good of those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. It's a genocide, but it's a social good.
You know, looking at this, these are some tough topics, and that's why we talk about them on Trending, because we're not having enough conversations. The data's out there. We could say, oh, this is just the way society is going. But what's our response? What should our response be? That marriage and family are good things. You know, it's funny. So I shared on the show, maybe Spirit Catholic Radio audience didn't hear it, but I'm engaged. I'm super excited. And it's been interesting because you share you're engaged and there are a lot of pessimistic people who've maybe had, you know, marriages that have failed at times. And they say, oh, and that, they kind of make a face. But then within the Christian world, you have more people who are more positive and happy. But I had someone just the other day, kind of not within an experience I expected, who just looked at me and said, marriage is amazing. I'm so excited for you to enter into this journey. In the secular world, that is not something you hear very often. And I was so taken aback that she said that, because she wasn't within that Catholic sphere of people. It's so rare to hear that anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was having a conversation with a guy over the summer and just talking about marriage. And it was, I was at a conference and a young woman asked me, how old do you have to be to get married? And it was one of those like, okay. And, you know, I think that depends on the person, right? I don't think there's any set age. My parents got married very young. My sister and my brother-in-law got married very young. They've done very well there. But I know that's not always the case. But I, you know, as we're talking, this gentleman says to me like, well, you know, what do you think about that? I'm like, honestly, I wish I would have met my wife 10 years earlier. You know, I wish I would have met her in high school and we would have gotten married in our early, you know, early 20s or late teens, because if I could have, I would have, right? We don't uphold that. I mean, look at the way we talk about marriage when young people do. We're always like, well, no, you need to wait. You know, you need to figure that out. Oh, you need that. No, if God's calling you to this vocation, you need to pursue it.
Especially people who are single, don't be afraid to say you want to be married, that you want to have children. These are good things to say, yet society says otherwise.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Timmery here. I want to share a little bit about an upcoming institute. It's the Masculine Genius Institute that for the first time is being brought to Southern California, Covina, September 28th and 29th. This is not just for men, but for all individuals, really talking about how do we develop that finished man? What is necessary? Because we have a lot in the realm of, you know, femininity and education on women, especially within the church, yet we've kind of stepped away from the conversation on men. again. And we're actually going to end the show today talking more about how we can help develop better leaders, providers, stronger male characters. So check that out at MasculineGeniusInstitute.com.
Yeah, speaking of masculine genius, I have a very low voice this week. I feel like it's just, I was sick last week. I don't know if you caught on to that. I wasn't in here. Father Tim was back because I was sick. I'd been in the mountains. I feel like I'm just like talking through gravel today. So I apologize if I'm extra masculine. That might be distracting to the listener.
We just can't handle it. It's too much.
I do tend to exude a little bit of the masculinity. So yeah, you know, hey, this new study came out. Jezebel is an article, this online people, and they're complaining or deriding, or there's a study that came out, women in TV and films, that, oh man, women are still being portrayed as homemakers and mothers, and how we're still being boxed into this category that women are moms. How dare they?
You know, this study came across my desk actually a couple months ago because it was a study out of San Diego State University. And I thought it was fascinating because they are real champions for women, both on television and then behind the scenes in the media industry. And we're not going to get into the nitty gritty of that side of it. But what we do want to talk about is, well, why is it that women are primarily portrayed as mothers and wives? Why is it that men are more often portrayed as working and having jobs? This is a question that I think is really important to ask.
I don't know if I don't watch enough TV. I swear I watch a lot of TV on the Netflix because we got rid of cable a couple years ago. We're cord cutters. So we're very picky. Again, this is anecdotal. I did not do the study, but it seems to me like every show I watch, if there is a woman who's a mom or a homemaker, she's also working. It's very rare that you sort of see the stay-at-home mom anymore. That is so out of the picture as almost to be kind of derided, I would say, in media. I mean, and that, I didn't see that even addressed here.
You know, I see a similar thing where across the board, yeah, I would reiterate that. Women are always very disciplined, very work-oriented. And a lot of the time, if anything, we see a trend on TV of single parenting. You know, right. We see a trend of, you know, women being more of the leaders and the heroines in movies, yet they don't cover the fact that we're seeing fewer and fewer men. And maybe we're also not taking into consideration, I think that you and I are looking like big picture, what are like the big box office movies that hit all the four quadrants, who are more family friendly, when there actually are a lot of films and TV shows that are being pumped out of there that we would never even touch.
Yeah,
and definitely have more of a male element, sometimes deeper violence, more crime, etc.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like if you look at the way women are portrayed in TV and films, and again, I am looking at more of the mass media stuff because I am not going to see all of them. Although when I'm on airplanes, I watch a lot of terrible films because you just get, there's just, at some point you just watch everything at some point. You're like, this is just stupid. But I feel like women are pressured to be this everything, right? You can't just be a mom. Because for some reason, to be a mom is like, it's like compromising. Enough. It's not enough. Or don't you wish you would have gone out and done something with your life? And you're like, well, no, I raised these incredible human beings. Like, that's an amazing accomplishment. And in our family, I always look at like the distribution of who's the more talented, the more intelligent, the more capable person. It's my wife. I mean, clearly. And so why wouldn't we put like the A team on raising the future generation and send the B team to go out to do the stuff that anybody could do? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's such a pressure on women is, and I think TV enforces that, you know, and that you have this idea that it's not good enough. And it's not good enough to just be a woman who goes out and works. You have to be a woman who goes out and works and raises a family. Mm-hmm. It's not good enough to be a mom. It's not good enough. And then you have to have this perfect home and all of these things. And there's just so much pressure on women. And I think studies like this kind of, I don't think they help it. I think they just throw on top of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the paradox is that you said that women are taught through television, but also in society as a whole, that they have to do everything. One thing isn't enough because women aren't happy with just being in the workforce. They want to have children. And then women are taught that you shouldn't be happy to have children, that you need to be outside of the home as well. And yes, we would agree, but that doesn't mean that you have to do everything. And women are at the point where they're taking care of sick relatives. They're working full time. Maybe they're working from home, but then they also have these children to run after. And I want to pose that maybe the reason, and again, I would still question the study somewhat, but maybe the reason that women are still portrayed, according to the study, more so as wives and mothers is because we want a happy ending to a story. And the real happy ending we still know is that family matters. Having children, a successful marriage, at the heart of family is what all of us are pursuing, and that is authentic human love.
I'd agree. I also think, too, I think of a lot of the sitcoms I've watched. Mom is portrayed as a mother, as a homemaker, or, you know, even if she's working, she's at home. But oftentimes that character is there because the dad is such a tremendous buffoon. You know, I mean, so you have mom as a foil to dad's sort of, you know, buffoonery.
The mom's kind of the cool person anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas dad, you know, dad's in his man cave tinkering with his stuff, you know, blowing things up or making, you know, tragic errors or giving the wrong advice. And mom kind of comes in and makes it all better. And, oh, honey, you know, and that they kind of work around him.
You know, and this reminds me of an area that you see with mom being the cool mom. Mom's doing everything on these TV movies anymore. What you're also seeing is that I think the irony is that while they're saying women, again, are being portrayed more so as mothers and wives, what we're seeing at the same exact time is that, in fact, women, especially teenagers and anyone in the college area, these women are being shown as, well, of course, they're on contraception. And in fact, it's an open conversation that these women are on contraception, or that they need to be on contraception, or she's on the pill, she's okay, she can have sex.
Right. I'll reference our conversation about the CW superhero shows.
Yes.
And, you know, what was it? Was it Black Lightning?
Yes, Black Lightning.
Yeah, I mean, where it was literally as if this season had been written by Planned Parenthood, where they're having this very, you know, very progressive conversation about their daughter who's decided she's ready to have sex at 16 years old. And, oh, honey, you know, we have to do the responsible thing. And aren't we proud she came and talked to us about this? And you're like, and that's what I think the study misses, too, is it's just pointing out statistics of people being represented. So they're being represented as homemakers or mothers or you know, but again, in that show, the mom is a psychologist, but also a homemaker. And she's being shown as the wise to the dad's irrational, you know. And so that's the other thing that's not quantified in this study is it's just showing mom happened to have children or a woman happened to be a mom who had children. Right. But it doesn't show the content and what's being expressed about those roles. And I think that's why it's just a very incomplete study. I just think it you know, and it's a one author study. It's only a couple pages long. But yeah, I think it just misses some of the deeper questions of how are they being. So they may be shown as a homemaker, but how are they being portrayed as a homemaker? Is it positive, negative? Or, you know, how is the man in that being portrayed?
You know, it's interesting because I've watched some of the episodes of that show Last Man Standing that everyone loves. I know it's coming back to Fox apparently pretty soon. I don't know if it's this year even or a year away. But I thought it was interesting because a lot of people portrayed it as, oh, it's a show that's, you know, has better family values, et cetera. And I could see in some ways, sure, but actually at the heart of it, yes, the mom is a wife and a mother, but she also has a far better form of education and type of job they try to portray than the father. And in fact, she's a cool mom. She's got her girls on contraception. She's the one who has those conversations with the kids, and they make sure that the dad's not a part of those conversations. And it always just got to me that so many people are praising the show. And sure, there are some great shows. I can admit that. You know, again, that's getting into the political realm. But at the same time, that is still what's being portrayed, a very feminist-oriented trajectory and a very pro-contraception, ignoring that we are meant to be wives and mothers at the same time.
I get so tired, and we talk about it on the show on a fairly regular basis, the pitting of gender against each other. And again, I think as a culture, we've made some tremendous strides as far as seeing the value of each of the feminine and seeing the value of the masculine, right? I feel like we're at a tipping point now. And if you look at college acceptance rates, I think that would argue that the masculine has been pushed now to the side so much that it's a negative. You know, we talk toxic masculinity and, you know, masculinity is the problem. And, you know, we've talked about these programs on campuses to combat, you know, masculinity essentially. And what we can do as Catholics, as believers in Jesus Christ, is we can look to St. Paul, we can look to the Gospels, we can see that God doesn't call us to be in tension or conflict with each other. That's the garden. You know, that's the sin of the garden to go, well, she's the one who made me do it, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to be seeking reconciliation on a daily basis within our family relationships, within our work relationships, to say that, hey, you bring something to this life that's valuable and important and beautiful and sacred. And so do I. And how can we then work together as a husband and a wife to really bring up our children and to bring up saints in our home? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I look with my wife and I, we're far from perfect. But the way we approach our kids is, you know, there's a give and take. And, you know, we very often will say things like, all right, you need to go in because I just blew that thing up and now you need to go put that back together. And it's not just me. I didn't always blow it up. Sometimes she'll blow it up. Like sometimes, you know, she'll have a confrontation with one of her kids and all of a sudden you have that testosterone rage and it got all out of hand. And then, okay, you need to go good cop because, you know, I bad copped, you know, and or whatever that is. That's necessary. Right. Mm-hmm. There, you know, there's male and female, and the both a reflection of the image and likeness of God, both bring a revelation of God into the family, into the world. And so I just, man, I'm so tired of this constant like, oh, well, women need to do this or men need to do this. I don't know. And as a man, I realize my position is just to sit here and shut up because I have no role in this because I'm an oppressor. Right. And I'm just so sick of that.
Yeah, what you're upholding is that sexual complementarity that Theology of the Body, JP2, talked about, that has been the church's teaching for forever, but he really shed new light on it, helping us to reemphasize the fact that the male and female bodies in a sexual level are meant to point to that complementarity that is even deeper. And that means co-parenting, not single parenting, despite the trends in our society today. We are called to be a family, not just a feminist-oriented relationship. We're going to come back here just in a second talking about masculinity, in fact.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
You know, we're talking about this study that shows, you know, gender roles, and women are still portrayed as homemakers or whatever. I was kind of lamenting that I feel like masculinity has been put in such a box. And I feel like sometimes as a culture, we think we get masculinity, right? And it's always that caveman mindset of, well, you know, men, they just like to do football and they're very aggressive and they're not emotional or they're not romantic or all those things. And the truth of that is it's not. I mean, like, men are much more complex than our culture acknowledges. And I know from myself, you know, some of the reading I've done, like John Eldridge has a great book, Wild at Heart, that was insightful into my own life and then understanding the lives of my young people, right? My young men. And I just feel like the more we put each other in these boxes, right, the more we just kind of disregard manhood, the more issues we're going to see between genders. And so we've been talking about this book. It's For Women Only, Men and, From Women Only is the name of the book. Which is weird because when I tried to post like a clip of that, I tried to post like a quote and I was like, for women only. I don't love the title, but she's got some really insightful comments. And we're talking about this week.
The subtitle is What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men. And so a couple weeks ago we started and we're going to be working through this book together. The next episode, if you don't catch all our episodes, we'll be talking about this as well on the Relevant Radio Network. And you can catch the podcast at radiotrending.com. So what's interesting is this really helps us dive into, well, how are men thinking? And I think that especially from a feminine perspective, we do think differently. And one of the things that we started discussing, and listen, ladies, before we get into this, I just want to say, I know women can kind of come back, well, it just makes me feel uncomfortable, or, you know, it's frustrating that we have to think about this is the way men think. And, well, how do you think guys feel sometimes with the way we interact as well?
We spend most of our life going, what were they thinking? I have no idea. But that's the truth, right? And
right.
I want to say this, there's a complimentary book to this that is for men only, right? Mm-hmm. On women. And we'll probably get to that one later in the show as well. Not today, but in the future episodes. But yeah, we're different. We think different. We process things different. And I think that's important to acknowledge and understand.
You know, I say this all the time. Listeners who are regulars know this. Neuroscientists are referred to as neurosexists because on the level of the brain, we react to even medications differently, not based on size and weight. So don't judge it. Just understand that this is the way that most men work. And that's why even in the statistics, and it's heavily researched, this is the vast majority of men. And so we've been talking about how it's fundamental to men versus women need to feel loved. Men basically equate feeling loved with being respected.
Right. And again, that's not the you will respect my authority. It's I think that you're good at what you do. Or, hey, I really like how you did that. Or deferring to a man every now and then, or, you know, saying, you know, hey, what do you think we should do with? Those are the ways that men kind of feel respect. It isn't like I want to rule like a tyrant in my home.
And maybe you're in that crazy cycle, as Shanti Feldhahn talks about it, where maybe one person's not being respected, the other doesn't feel love, or vice versa. And so now neither of you show either to the other person. Mm-hmm. Well, the only way you will get out of an unhealthy cycle is when one person chooses to get over themselves, even if the other person isn't.
Right.
And so we talked about, well, here are ways that we can help change that cycle. And it's not just with spouses or in a relationship, but maybe it's with your child, because what the research shows is that even young men need this.
I think that's very important to acknowledge, that young men, particularly in adolescence, you know, they're trying these things out. And the question that they're asking so often is, am I good enough? Do I measure up? Right. And so giving young men the opportunity to make mistakes is huge. And affirming them when they do things right. Oh my gosh, that was so great. When a young man cleans his room and it's not perfect, don't come in and go, oh my gosh, it's not right. You go, hey, oh my gosh, thank you so much for cleaning your room. And that was, I really appreciate that you did that and you weren't asked to do it. What you're going to find is that young man will clean his room again. Mm-hmm. If you come in and you go, well, you didn't do that, and then you do this, then he's going to go, I'm not good enough to do anything, you know, right. And you've just shut it down.
You just completely shut it down. So let's talk about three more. We talked about three last time, but three more of those areas where we can work on this. Because I think a lot of women today, and men, even showing respect to their coworkers, don't know how to walk through this. And so here are the three more pieces I want to point to. Communication in public and assumptions. So basically looking at how even when we communicate, that it's important that communication is really emphasized. That's a form of respect with men. And part of that has to do with how things are said, rather than saying going into an attack mode. In fact, Shanti actually mentions an area where she was doing some of the research for this area of the book. And she asked a man this. It was a total pointed question. And she learned from it because one of the guys responded, do you know how to put together a romantic event for your partner and basically one that you would enjoy? And the guy responded, that automatically was a question implying that I don't know how to.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so you just have the way you communicate. Well, do you even know how to create a romantic dinner?
If you say it like, do you even, absolutely. If anytime you say, do you even to someone, I don't think you have to be a man to be like, oh, you need to shut up right now. Yeah.
But, you know, working on the way we say things, because I think it's important to everyone. I mean, not just to men, but I think that that's an area that she really emphasizes, that men will hear things in a certain way and all of a sudden, like, they shut down because of how it was said.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and in the book she talks about, and I completely agree with this, there's the idea of a man wants to do, like, repairs around the house. Right? Like, mm-hmm. I can do that. I can build that wall, or I can make that piece of furniture or something. And the wife will go, oh, honey, why don't we just pay somebody? It'll get done faster, blah, blah, blah. And she's thinking, oh, it's pragmatic. It'll save him time. You won't be stressed. And he's kind of like, you don't even think I can build a table. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't even think I can cut like four pieces of wood and nail them together. And granted, I'll probably have to do it 2-3 times, but there's an adventure in doing that, right? Like, yeah. Men like to solve puzzles. And so when you take that away, yeah, that becomes sort of like, oh, I can cut wood. I mean, like, that's, you know.
But that's how simple it is, you guys. And I love, that's why it's great talking about this together. So the next one is showing respect in public. And so talking about how,
you mean like walking 3 paces behind?
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Make sure you walk a good distance, yep. Bow yep. before you speak.
Absolutely. That's not what we're talking about. Oh my gosh. Man. All right, go. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But no, but here's the thing. That's what people think about, though. When you say in public, recognizing that, other person could be sensitive, and even to the point of not telling jokes in public about a guy. Guys take that really sensitively, in fact.
Right. It's interesting because guys will joke around with each other all the time. And that's just, it's posturing. It's fun. It's the way we do that. We typically don't do that in front of each other's spouses, and that's when a guy tends to get a little bit like, shut up, and gets a defensive, right? And so if you're in a group of people and your wife tells a story at your expense or kind of undercuts you in front of people, that's something that a guy, he may not say this in the moment, but he'll probably chew on it and be like, and you're like, what's wrong with you? Nothing, right? or whatever, And Yeah, it is true. And I, but again, I think it goes both ways. You know, men, you don't make fun of your spouse. You don't tell jokes about your wife in front of other people.
But I mean, guys, like, don't really do this for the most part, too.
I mean, unless they're a jerk, yeah.
Yet women, I think, often think that it's okay. Well, they're tough. They're okay. But in fact, men can be sensitive, too. And the reality is that it's more so the fact that they feel that others are perceiving that you're disrespecting them,
right?
In fact. And so I think that that's a really important one. And it's interesting because I have some friends and big family, beautiful family. And it's interesting because I spend a lot of time with the sisters. And over the last couple of summers, we've spent time with one of their brothers as well. And I always found it so interesting because they defer to their brother all the time. If something's a little more challenging physically, like, oh, don't worry about it. My brother will be here in 10 minutes. He can carry all of these boxes instead of the three of us taking a bunch of trips. Or, you know what? I think that my brother's perspective from a guy is really important. Let's wait and ask him what he thinks. That's something that I always really respected that these girls had. They're super competent, super professional, well-educated, but I was always blown away that they wanted their brother's perspective on things.
Right. And again, wanted versus needed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's, I think that for a guy is really true. So women do this thing to men sometimes where they'll be like, hey, what do you think about this? And then a guy will go, oh, well, I like, you know, or an outfit, you know, oh, I like those shoes with, do you like these shoes with this outfit? Yeah, I think it's, oh no, this is terrible. And you're like, well, why did you ask me? You know? And women do it all the time because they don't think about it. But for a guy, it's kind of like, I gave you my opinion, like, because you said you wanted it, and then you threw it out immediately. It was like, why? What was that exercise about, right? What was that for, you know? So, yeah, I think there's something that women don't see it in the same way. Yeah.
Absolutely. So the last one we want to touch on is assumptions, that you don't assume bad things about men. And yeah. I can say personally, I've had these experiences with my fiancé where we've been talking, and he stopped one point, and he goes, don't think bad things about me. And I stopped like, what do you mean don't think bad things? It was a situation, there was something going on, and he knew ahead of time my mindset was going to be in one direction. He's like, don't just assume you know where I'm coming from. And I'll never forget that, because that in Shanti's book, she really talks about how assumptions really cause a big problem before any communication or action's taken place.
Yeah, it was one of the most valuable pieces of advice we received during marriage prep was never assume you know the motive or what your partner is thinking. You know, like, I can't ever assume I know why Christina did something, my wife, and she can't assume that she knows why I did, you know? And so that, and it comes down to the, well, they leave their socks there cause they don't care about me. Remember, you know, and like, well, no, that's not it at all. Or, you know, well, she doesn't buy the cereal I like cause she doesn't care about me, or she doesn't do this or whatever. She plans the kids' stuff in the middle of when I'm home. Cause you know, no, you don't know the motive. And so that's when you always ask someone, or you say to someone like, hey, I don't know if you understood that this is how this feels. You know, my wife and I, the other day, I rearranged my office. My office is a disaster. It is a disaster. I'm kind of reclaiming it after summer because summer was so busy and we had so many things going on. And
but dirty food wrappers.
No. It's more like we pulled all the books off the shelves so that we could create a library scene for the show. And then they all just got thrown them off because I had to leave. So that kind of stuff.
So what happened?
So she comes in and I said, hey, look at the way, you know, I set it up. And she starts trying to help me with the things that weren't done. I said, well, that's not why I asked you in here. I wanted to show you. I wanted you to say, hey, that's really cool. You set up the chairs. That's all I needed at this point. But she just thinks different, you know?
It reminds me of that one YouTube video. If you haven't seen it yet, go look up It's Not About the Nail. It'll give you a good laugh. And it's talking especially about the issue where we don't necessarily listen to each other. So check out the book For Women Only by Shanti Feldhahn.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.